It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is another edition of Rico Bronya, episode 717. If you are looking for the Rico in which we analyzed and overanalyzed the Mets losing 2 out of 3 to the Toronto Blue Jays, that would be episode number 716. Today on episode 717, we are going to break down everything Steve Cohen had to say when he finally discussed the 2026 season, and he did so with old friend of the show, John Heyman, and Joel Sherman. So what we're going to do on this, Rico, is we're going to listen to everything Steve had to say. After each answer, we'll give you some quick thoughts, so it'll work two ways. A, if you haven't heard the interview, which hopefully you did, because I think overall Joel and John did a very good job, you get to hear it for the first time, and then you'll hear our reaction to everything he had to say. With all respects to Heyman and Sherman, we cut out their questions because sometimes they're very long-winded. And so what I will do to set it up is I'll give you a very brief kind of synopsis on what the question was for Steve Cohen, and then we'll hear his long-winded answer. There are 23 different questions for Steve Cohen. I wrote them all down, so we're very, very organized. So without any further ado, the very first question for Steve Cohen is, why are you 36 and 50? What the hell happened?
Yeah, listen, I mean, if you asked me at the beginning of the season, I would never have expected this type of performance. I mean, it's just horrendous. No sugarcoating it. This is not anything close to what I expected. And it's really disappointing. I mean, wildly disappointing. You know, when you spend this type of money, when, you know, when you put, I mean, I know everyone is working hard and we thought we put together a pretty good club. But you know, when it doesn't work, you have to sit back and go, what the hell happened here? And I think it's a confluence of events. You know, I think there was a lot of change, and it's easy to kind of put it down on paper, but you know, these are human beings and a lot of them are in contract years. And a lot of them have, perhaps have never played at another club before. I think coming to New York matters, you know, there's more pressure in New York, more reporters that are in your face after a game, before a game. We've had injuries to significant players. Losing Lindor obviously hurt us, and you know, as people are only finally seeing Lindor and Soto playing together, I don't think there've been more than 10, 15 games that they've actually played together. So it's a confluence of events, and it's like a bad brew. Underperformance of our younger players. I tell you, the thing that I find really incredibly disappointing is, and I saw a stat the other day that I think we're 6-18 in one-run games. I think the Phillies are the opposite. We've scored 14 runs in the ninth inning, I think, you know, give or take. And what does that tell me? It tells me when the game gets, you know, when it's on the line, we're just not performing. You know, people get anxious, and whatever the reasons are, that, you know, in a big at bat, they're just not getting it done. And that's how you lose. And so it's a confluence of events, of different things that have come together to, you know, explain the lack of performance.
A lot of truths from Steve Cohen. It's something we've talked a lot about this season. There isn't one reason for why this team has been bad. As he said, a confluence of events. I think that what you hear in this first answer from Steve Cohen is honesty. I mean, I think that is a very honest answer. I don't think we want to hear about injuries, even though injuries are a part of what's occurred. But when he says, and this is the part that sort of annoyed me about that answer, but I do preface, I think that Steve Cohen, and you'll get this sense over the course of the next hour, he's very honest with his answers, maybe to a fault. But when he says, it's difficult when you make this many changes, when you have so many new players, I think that your reaction is the same reaction I had when Steve is saying this, which is, it was your choice or the organization's choice to have so many changes. And so to hear that as an excuse kind of bothers me, because it was your decision. You never made an offer to Pete Alonso. You chose to trade Brandon Nimmo. You chose to trade Jeff McNeil. I'll leave Diaz out because I think that situation was different. I think they wanted to bring him back, and for a myriad of reasons, it didn't happen. So when you use the excuse, or one of the confluence of events you bring up is how many changes there have been, it's a reminder that you guys decided to make all of those changes. The guys also asked Steve Cohen, so how are you doing with all this losing that's going on?
You know what I tell everyone? I said, my life's going great, except for one thing.
It is unbelievable. And the one thing that everyone pays attention to.
I'm spending a lot of time on. I watch every game. You know, I'm dying with every fan. I mean, it's a riot because fans will text me and email me, and I answer them back. And I mean, our fans are dying. Okay, they build their whole lives around the baseball season. Like, that's a chunk of their lives. And when you take the joy out of their baseball season, it's just, you know, this is the reactions you get. Okay, because it's so meaningful to them, and it's meaningful to me. And I'm sitting there like, it just takes the joy out of, you know, a chunk of your life.
I'm going to be a slight jerk, not complete jerk, but slight jerk. When he says he watches every game, he's living and dying with every pitch. Weren't you at Nick playoff games while Met games were going on? So unless you're DVRing it Evan style, are you really watching every single pitch? Jokes aside, I do think that there's a genuine passion from Steve Cohen. I don't think there's any doubt about that. One of the other questions was, what lessons have you learned from this failure of a season so far?
Yeah, you know, listen, if you talk to your analytics people, they'll say it has an effect, but not a big effect. You can point to players that didn't have that problem. I think it's a combination of New York perhaps never being traded before, perhaps being in your contract year. You know, I would say it's probably a brew. And when it doesn't work, you know, the pressure's mount on players. But it definitely has to be factored in. And, you know, especially in context when you might only sign a player for 2 or 3 years. And if you're signing them to big contracts and you think you might be giving away some of that contract as they adjust to New York. And, you know, that's something that's got to be thought about.
Continuing to bring up the adjustment, and, well, when it's a short-term contract, it's even more difficult. You guys chose to do that. Your game plan this offseason, or this past offseason, was, ooh, a short-term deal for Bo Bichette. Ooh, a short-term deal for Jorge Polanco. Ooh, Marcus Semien only has 2 years left on his deal after this, unlike Brandon Nimmo, who's got 4. So it's slightly annoying to hear one of the reasons you're giving for the failures, something you guys consciously decided to do. Now, the money question, the things that most Met fans care about, and that, of course, is the president of baseball operations, David Stearns. Why, Steve Cohen, is David Stearns safe? Why is he still here getting to make these decisions?
Yeah, listen, David's a thoughtful, I'm in my conversations with him. He's incredibly thorough. You know, there aren't answers that I walk away and say, oh, you know, I don't agree with that. Or, I mean, he's pretty, you know, buttoned down and knows what he's talking about. Okay. We're 2.5 years into a contract. Everyone forgets, does he get any credit for 24? Does that not count? Okay. And we almost made it to the World Series. And that was just 2 years ago. So it's a mixed record. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going great. Okay. But it's too early to really make evaluations. And I feel really strongly that if we're going to burn and churn, that's a terrible place to be. And every time you burn and churn, that guess what? The next time, nobody wants to come. Okay. Is someone going to put their career in your hands if you're going to be, you know, short-term oriented? And yeah, I have a contract. It's a 5-year contract, and we're going to live that contract out.
So he gave almost the list of reasons why David Stearns should remain the president of baseball operations. And I would say that 4 of the 5 reasons I quickly jotted them down are terrible reasons. Like, they're not good reasons. But one of the things he said is something I've said a lot, which is, if you burn and churn, which is his term, not mine, if you burn and churn David Stearns, because of the underachievement of 25 and the disaster of 2026. And yes, the farm system has gone backwards, so there are plenty of critiques for what's happened over the three seasons that he's run this team. He's right. Like, are you really going to get the most appealing president of baseball operations? Are you really going to get the best and the brightest to want this job when they're going to look at Steve Cohen's resume and say, you've been through like 18 general managers and you took a highly regarded one, no matter what we think, but a highly regarded one in David Stearns, and you threw him out after three seasons when most realize the president of baseball operations is doing a lot more than just building out a roster? That is the answer I agree with. Now, I take a lot of crap for that, and I'm sure Steve would take a lot of crap for that, but that answer, the burn and churn, completely fair. Agree with it. Makes sense. Even the most ardent David Stearns hater could take a step back, I at least hope, and say, I get that. I understand that. But some of these other answers that he gave, like when I talk to David Stearns and I ask him questions, I'm never like, What? What does that mean? You're not a baseball guy. So the smart guy from Harvard is saying things that you understand or make sense on paper, and you're like, that proves he should be here. Or his quote is, he's very buttoned down. By the way, I thought it was buttoned up. So I think Steve Cohen may need to be in Idiots with Idioms. But the other answer that has to drive Met fans nuts is, doesn't he deserve credit for 2024? Let's give an honest answer here. Not a dick answer, not a kiss ass answer, but let's try to be honest, which I try to do on the Rico. He deserves some credit for 2024, a little bit of credit for 2024. Some may argue a tiny bit of credit for 2024. Do I give him credit for signing Luis Severino, who had a really good year? Absolutely. Do I give him credit for signing Sean Manaea, who turned into what we all thought was the ace of the team in 2024? Absolutely. I give him credit for that. But the guts of this team, the core of this team, no. I'm not giving him credit. Not all answers have to be complete 100%. Like, for those that say I give him zero credit for 2024, well, you're not being fair, because I just named two starting pitchers that he added. And you have to admit, the Mets are not a playoff team without the additions and the availability and consistency, especially in the second half of the season, from Luis Severino and from Sean Manaea. So we have to, yes, give him some credit for some of the additions he made to the rotation. But the guts of the team and the core of the team, no, not really. And I also think, and I guess this is the good and the bad of Steve, he's very honest. And I think, as you're hearing and you'll continue to hear, he gives a lot of honest answers, maybe to a fault. But I would advise him to leave out asking the fans to give David Stearns credit for 2024. The guy who made the season survive by hitting maybe one of the biggest home runs in the history of the franchise, and then had a really good NLCS, David Stearns couldn't wait to get rid of. And Pete Alonso, and if it was up to him, wouldn't have even been back for 2025. So I don't know if I would necessarily say to the fan base, does he get credit for 2024? He gets a tiny bit of credit for 2024. But a lot of the other answers, to summarize, was basically Steve Cohen admitting, I don't know a lot about baseball. I'm not a baseball expert, which I respect that he admits that. And David Stearns sounds really smart. When I ask him questions, he's got great answers. Well, I'm going to tell you something, not just about David Stearns, but about many, many other people. Some of the greatest politicians are full of crap, but they give you really good answers. And I ain't going to list names because it's going to offend most people. So that, to me, doesn't prove David Stearns is the right guy for the job. Why? Because he gives you good answers that makes you say, huh, that makes a lot of sense. Yes. Congratulations, David Stearns is not a bumbling idiot. So a lot of his answers right there on why Stearns should remain, not great answers. But the one I agree with, the one I'll defend, is the burn and churn answer he gave. It is not just a bad look for the franchise, but I think will make it almost nearly impossible to find the right president of baseball operations and the right general manager if you're firing this guy after 2.5 years and three baseball seasons. And also, there is more to an organization and being a president of baseball operations than just the players you acquire. Now, eventually, you have to win. I mean, eventually, you can't sit here. I can't sit here and say, give him more time, give him more time. Eventually, there needs to be results. Steve Cohen, why did you guys decide to fire Carlos Mendoza?
Listen, I describe it as, I think it came down to one simple question. I mean, were we going to extend Carlos or not? And if the answer was no, then I, you know, in my discussions with David, we both agreed at this, you know, at this time is like, you know, give him a break, you know, like, I mean, the guy's sitting in front of the cameras every day. And, you know, if you're not going to extend him, then I describe it as a mercy shot. And you know, given where the club was, and frankly, you know, I watched that game where we had six errors and the next day we had two errors, and, you know, the club just wasn't playing well. And, you know, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, when you take the manager's job, I don't know too many managers that are, you know, in that role forever. And that's just part of the gig. And sometimes you have to make a change.
Once you realize,
sure I heard something right on your answer about Stearns. I think you said you had a 5-year contract, and we're going to play that out. Does that mean David Stearns is getting the full 5 years, no matter what?
Listen, I mean, I'm going forward with David as our leader, and listen, there's no guarantees in anything. Okay, I'm going to evaluate this as we go along, and listen, David knows that it hasn't worked out the way he thought it would work out, the way I thought it would work out. He'd be the first one to admit that he's made some mistakes. And this is a guy who's reflective. You know, what am I looking for? I'm looking for someone when things are going great, hey, it's easy. When things aren't going great, you know, are you reflective? Are you adaptable? Are you flexible? I believe David is, and I hear it. And so that encourages me that it's not just my way being a very, orthodox approach. Now saying that, we haven't performed the way we wanted to perform, which means, you know, I'm a hands-off guy. Okay. I don't want to be an invasive owner. Okay. There's plenty of examples in the sports world where owners come in over the top consistently and generally the performance suffers. So I don't want to be that owner. Now, saying that, because we're not performing, you know, I'm doing a deeper dive and I'm trying to understand what happened here. And listen, I have a lot of business experience. I'm not a baseball expert. Okay. I mean, it's not my day job. Okay. But if I can add value, you know, and so I'm doing a deeper dive, trying to understand, like any owner would in a business, when things aren't performing the way they're supposed to. And that's what I'm doing. And out of that, you know, I mean, but, you know, we'll figure out what changes that need to be made. But the change that's not going to be made is, you know, moving David out at this point. I'm just not going to do it, you know. And now, listen, if we get to year five and our performance continues to suffer, you know, at that point, you know, everything's fair game.
So what there's a lot there. Number one, with Mendy, it was a mercy firing. Once they realize he's not coming back for 2027, put him out of his misery, makes a lot of sense. He also specifically cited the doubleheader and the six-error game, so that clearly was the game that forced Steve Cohen to say, we got to do something. And that answer, without directly saying it, confirms my suspicion that this was a Cohen firing more than a Stearns firing, even though he also says he's a very hands-off owner. He also said David Stearns is the first to admit he's made mistakes. We'd love to hear that, because I haven't heard that yet. We've listened to a lot of David Stearns. I haven't heard him once say, I made a mistake doing this. Now, granted, once you do that, you're questioning the player that you acquired. So if he comes out and says, I made a mistake trading for Freddie Peralta, you're ripping Freddie Peralta. So I get you need to be careful. But when Steve Cohen tells us, hey, guys, don't worry, David Stearns is the first one to admit that he screwed up, we haven't heard that. But the key takeaway from that, great follow-up by Joel Sherman on this, is that he's not guaranteeing the full 5 years. He's guaranteeing you he's here for next year. He's guaranteeing you he's going to be the architect of this upcoming offseason, however it looks with a potential lockout. But if things are bad or things are worse, there is certainly no guarantee based on that answer that David Stearns is going to survive the full allotment of the five-year contract. Any regrets from this past winter? And you said you're a hands-off owner. Will you continue to be a hands-off owner?
Yeah, listen, I did step in on Diaz and it didn't work out. I think each situation was sort of idiosyncratic. And if you asked me at the beginning of that offseason, would Diaz, Alonso, Nimmo, and McNeil all be gone? The answer is probably not. You know, we'd probably keep one of them. You know, it would work out. It didn't. And all for different reasons. I'm not saying that I'm not going to relitigate, you know, what happened there. I got to look forward. And listen, they were great Mets. I still follow them. I still follow them in the box scores. I'm rooting for them. Okay. I mean, they're good guys. Terrific guys. But we got to look forward. These are the decisions a president of baseball ops makes. I allow them to make them. And frankly, you know, it's too early to evaluate David. It's too early to evaluate what happened here and let time sort of keep going. And then we'll look back maybe with a little more information and evaluate.
He is so right about something. As emotional as I am about Alonso, and they'd be better with Pete Alonso, they didn't want to give him a five-year deal. So I know it's frustrating to say this, but we'll have a better idea if they made the right decision or not in the long term as we get later on into the contract. That's why, and I'm not doing it here, but I'm previewing it, we're going to break down the DeGrom decision soon because it's year four of a five-year contract that the Mets didn't want to offer him. So we have a better idea of, did the Mets make the right decision or not in never even making a five-year offer to him? So that part is true as much as I wanted Pete back. What he admits there is that this was all a David Stern show in terms of who was staying and who was going. He wasn't going to jump in on the Alonso negotiations. And it sounds like the only reason he jumped in on the Diaz negotiations is because they were close and he was trying to seal the deal. And obviously that did not work out. This is a really interesting answer. So take a close listen. Steve, do you worry about the team off of this three-year trend that we've seen?
I'm extremely worried. Okay. I mean, what's important? Okay. I mean, I think good teams develop players, have a pipeline of players. When we looked at it last year, we were generally feeling pretty good about our farm system. We've had regression in our farm system. Now, I'm told that development isn't linear. Okay, it isn't like some straight line where everything goes up. That doesn't mean that some of these players, will over time improve, where they are today. When you're looking at things objectively and you're saying, okay, how are we going to get better? And we've graduated some good players, right? I mean, Nolan McClain, A.J. Ewing, Christian Scott's come back. So there's a good core there. And we've got an outfield. Right. And we've been, this year we built a pretty good bullpen. And so it's not all bad. OK. But between signings where we couldn't get the players on the field and some, lack of performance from some of our younger players, it set us back. And so when you think about, OK, where is the help going to come from? It's really concerning to me but development isn't linear we'll have to figure it out. I mean, 27 looks tougher, right? Our budget is, depending on who opts in, who opts out, we could be close to $300 million already. And so it doesn't allow us a lot of flexibility. And, do we see other players coming from the farm system to, sort of buttress what we already have? Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, we'll have to see how that develops. And maybe we'll feel differently a couple months from now. And that's certainly possible. When I look at 27, I get concerned. And especially in a year where I don't know how many games we're going to play, right? I mean, I think we're all wondering what's going to happen. And so it's going to be a weird year. But this is where, I look to my front office to be creative, and it'll be a good test to see how creative we are.
It is very rare that you'll ever hear an owner about the team he owns saying, I'm deeply concerned. That was fascinating to hear. A couple of things about the money and what they're locked into. Bo Bichette has a player option of $42 million. That will play a huge role in how much flexibility they have. I am still leaning towards the fact he's going to opt out, which clears out the $42 million. There's a team option on Luis Robert Jr. at $20 million. I cannot see any way they pick up that option. Clay Holmes has a player option of $13 million. I assume he is going to opt out and become a free agent. Tyrone Taylor, $3.8 million, becomes a free agent. $8 million for Freddie Peralta and $8 million for David Peterson because they were paying him. That's a lot of money that's being freed up. So when I hear how locked in they are payroll rise, and I factor in who's due raises, like Jorge Polanco, believe it or not, is going to get $6 million more next year. Luke Weaver, $3 million. Luis Torrens, $3 million. But believe it or not, Juan Soto's making $4 million less. Devin Williams is making $500,000 less. And there's a lot of arbitration-eligible players that the Mets could easily non-tender, like Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos, if we're being completely honest. Or they tender them and trade them away. So there's a world where there's flexibility. What he doesn't mention, and I've mentioned this for years now, is there just aren't a lot of great free agents, especially position player-wise. So they need, and it hasn't happened, they need young players to develop, and obviously that hasn't been the case. All right, Steve, the trade deadline. Do you foresee this team selling at the trade deadline?
Does anything change in your overall strategy? Should we assume that right now we're leaning or looking at potential sale going into the trade deadline, and that you will continue to fund the team?
What are our odds to make the playoffs today?
Joel will tell you, I don't look at who does the odds, because they said you were 95% with a week to go last year. Yeah. And I was telling them, I don't think those are the odds. So I don't.
That's true. You were telling me that.
Yeah. I would. Yes, I was. The odds are not good. Right. The odds are not good.
Okay. So the odds aren't good. And it kind of reminds me of 23, where, listen, I'm not afraid to go down that path. I've demonstrated that before. Is that my preference? No. Okay. But the reality is it's going to play out and we're going to know. Okay. And I don't, you know, if it's ambiguous, tougher place to be. But, you know, if we don't get in gear, it's not going to be ambiguous. It's going to be obvious.
And your strategy will remain the same. You're going to expect to spend liberally and accept losing money personally going forward.
Listen, I make a good living, okay? So, John, I'm okay. Okay, I'm going to be okay. All right.
Okay. I was worried.
All right. So, you know, I'm committed to this team. I've demonstrated I'm willing to do what it takes. And you know, now listen, there may be, I don't know what the rules are going to be going forward in the new CBA. And maybe I'm going to be restrained. Okay. In that case, you know, I always say, just tell me the rules and I'll operate under any construct.
That would make you feel good that they'll spend. But like I said earlier, there may not be a lot of great players to spend on. The follow-up I wish they asked is, all right, you're willing to spend. Are you willing to spend on players you're trading away to enhance the prospect capital? Because I think that's going to be a bigger story as the Mets make the decision to sell. Clearly, they're going to sell. Their odds of making the playoffs right now are 0.1%. It is not ambiguous. The only way they don't sell is if they go on some kind of 12-game winning streak, which I don't think they're capable of. So the question is, they're going to sell. How aggressive will Steve be paying off contracts to enhance the prospect return? My guess, based on that answer, would be he'd be willing to do it. Do you think Lindor and Juan Soto are available at this trade deadline, Mr. Cohen?
Yeah, I don't see them going anywhere. Okay, and frankly, I think that's a story that was last year's story, and that I actually am told and believe strongly that these guys are getting along much better, and so I just don't see that as an issue anymore. And you know, listen, I'm lucky enough to have two high quality players like that. And you know, with the elimination of, you know, whatever issues there were last year, I mean, I'm thrilled that they're on the team.
I am stunned that Steve Cohen admitted there were issues last year, because up until Steve made that comment, Juan Soto and Lindor not getting along was rumor and innuendo, and none of us actually knew for sure if it was true. When the owner comes out and says, that's a last year's story, whatever issues they had are now gone, to me, that leads to 100 follow-up questions, which is, what was their issue? How did they solve it? How bad did it get? Are they best friends now? Like, that leads to a million questions. And that's why I say I appreciate that this owner is honest. He's probably one of the most forthcoming owners I've ever heard, whether it's in New York sports or in sports in general. But sometimes you need to be, his word was ambiguous at the trade deadline. Sometimes you need to be ambiguous. Like, why would you admit there was an issue between Lindor and Soto? Because to me as a fan, I need to know why. Was it baseball related? Was it non-baseball related? Like, we know about why A-Rod and Jeter didn't get along. It was a magazine article, and it was A-Rod's comments. We know that McNeil and Lindor had a falling out because of something that happened on the baseball field. What happened between these two guys? And I know I'll get 100 emails speculating, but Steve Cohen opened the door. And I think he also opened the door, and it's fair game for beat reporters, to ask specifically to Soto and Lindor, hey, the owner confirmed you guys had an issue. What was it about? How did you squash it? Like, there's a billion questions. Hey, Steve, are you looking at hiring somebody from the outsides of the organization to kind of look at what's happening with this franchise right now?
I'm doing it, you know, with my own internal people, you know, and I'm not going to really go into it. I'm not a baseball guy, but, you know, I understand decision making. I understand how businesses work. I understand. So I think, you know, I mean, I don't expect to find anything that would shock me. But listen, like anything else, like if I can add value to, you know, how our team operates, I'm going to try and do it.
Steve is the one doing the investigation. He's the one looking at what the hell is wrong. One thing, though, that may be something that needs to change is David Stearns' pitching philosophy of not going long term. As of right now, the only reported offer the Mets have made in the Stearns era on a long term contract to a starting pitcher was Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Outside of that, some of them wouldn't have worked out, clearly. Look at Corbin Burns. But we haven't seen an aggressiveness in terms of long term contracts to starting pitchers. Steve, do you think that philosophy needs to change moving forward?
Well, you can have any philosophy you want, but you're competing against 29 other teams that may have a different philosophy. And I look at it and say, okay, you know, we don't want to offer somebody more than X years, and everybody else does. What are you going to do? Okay, like that gets back to being flexible and adaptable. And so it may be that, you know, that needs to be looked at. And I don't know the right answer. Okay, I mean, when it doesn't work, everyone can jump on and say, see, it didn't work. Okay. And then when it does work, everybody says you're a genius. And so maybe it's somewhere in the middle, right? But I mean, these are legitimate questions to ask, right? I mean, you can't just operate in a vacuum. And, you know, in the end, if you want a player and you have to, you know, pay a little bit more or spend a little bit more, but you get the player you want, that may be worth it.
That question is so important because we talked briefly about free agency and how there aren't a lot of great position player options. Tarik Skubal is a great option. He's a starting pitcher. Now, he had an injury this season. We'll see if he completes this season healthy and how he pitches. But he won two Cy Youngs in a row. But he's also approaching that age where you don't want to give him a 7 or 8 year contract. Are you willing to make that exception for Tarik Skubal? That's why that's such an important question, because in terms of just raw free agency, obviously, trade markets can be very different. You never know who will become available. But when it comes to free agency, that's the move that can change everything. And the only chance the Mets have of acquiring Tarik Skubal is if David Stearns and this organization changes their philosophy on pitching. Steve, you talked a little bit about the CBA. He even mentioned there's a chance they're going to miss games next year. We all knew that, but here's an active owner admitting it. Are you going along with the possibilities of an MLB salary cap?
Listen, I mean, I'm a league first guy, okay, you know, I'm going to allow the labor committee to do their thing. I don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, I'm pretty confident that whatever changes are going to be made will be post 27, Okay. And so I think we can operate, with in the way we're operating through 27. And because, yeah, I mean, I don't know when, how the CBA will go and when they come to an agreement. But it could easily come in the middle of a season, could come before the season, could come, maybe there's no lockout. Maybe they figure it out. I don't know. Huh. But my sense is that, my belief is that, whatever changes will be made will be post 27 and won't interfere with the season.
Remember, there is an off season prior to the lockout. It's a brief one, but there are, I would say, almost a month of off season activities in terms of signing free agents, making trades before the lockout ever occurs. If you recall back to the winter of 21 into 22, the Mets made a bunch of moves before the lockout even started. It'll be interesting to see the philosophies of some of the bigger free agents. I am skeptical there'll ever be a salary cap. But if there is, if I'm wrong, if I take a major L that there is an MLB salary cap, I would assume they are going to allow teams like the Dodgers and the Mets and the Yankees a long period of time to be grandfathered in. I can't imagine that it's like, all right, drop $200 million right now. So I think he's giving us a hint that 27 is not going to be greatly affected in terms of if there's a cap, what does it look like? That's why I'm curious if Boris has Skubal sign prior to the lockout or post lockout. Joel Sherman brought up something that was weird. Joel Sherman is a great reporter. Okay, he's one of the best baseball guys. But over the last few months, he said some weird things, almost like he's a talk show host. Remember when he went on an F-word diatribe at Yankee fans? He wrote an article the other day that I was like, damn, this sounds like a Sean Morash opinion, in which he suggested that the Mets have trial managers at the end of the season, kind of like the Cubs had the College of Coaches back in the early 60s. Very weird idea, very Morashian idea. He then tells Steve Cohen, I'd be pissed at MLB. I bought the team. I'm Steve Cohen. I want to spend as much money as I can. I want to decorate my house however I want to. Now you're imposing a salary cap? Here's what Steve Cohen had to say about all that.
No, I'm in a league, okay? You know, it's not like it's my house and I can do what I want, okay? And so, this is, when you buy a team, you're buying into a league, okay? And so it's not quite the same. And the league, if it decides and wants to move, in a different direction, with a consensus of owners, that's the way it's going to work. And that's what you're buying into. You have to accept that coming in.
God, I hate condo community leadership.
Well, listen, I always say I got to live in the world. I don't create the world. This is the way it is, And I'm supportive, I mean, these are hard decisions and I respect my owners and we all got it. We all got to work together in some way that so we can get to where we think, the league needs to get to.
Nice try, Joel. I like that. It was a good effort.
That was a good effort.
It's not only an effort, it's actually...
I would have gone with that, but I don't agree with the premise, but okay.
It's actually what I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, I'll say it again. If you buy your own house, you can do what you want. If you buy a house in a community, where there are rules and regulations that you don't control, then you got to work with people.
Yeah. Very, very weird interaction. So I got nothing to add to that. Steve, do you really think Andy Green is going back to the front office? And if so, which is the indication, who will the next manager of the New York Mets be?
Yeah, I think, I take people at their face value. If they say they're going to do something, I believe them. I don't know why they would tell me otherwise.
Oh, that's his choice.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so I think we're going to do a search at the end of the year, a proper search. And I'm sure there's plenty of qualified people out there. I don't think there'll be a shortage of people who will want this job. Okay. And so, we'll go about our normal process, interview people and try to make the best choice we can.
Remember the Andy Green, I'm going back to the front office call is his call. So the card subject to change, he may have a great time managing. There may be success so far. Not really. They're 2-4 in the Andy Green era. But this is not the Mets telling you they don't want to hire him. This is Andy Green saying, I don't want to be the next manager of the New York Mets. There's a lot of negativity at the ballpark, rightfully so. There's a lot of negativity at social media over the way this season has gone. What do you think of all that, Steve Cohen?
So people want to express themselves. I don't have a problem with that. Okay. In fact, I support that. Okay. When they get to the point where there are people around them complaining that they're ruining their day at the ballpark, well, you know, you have a right to express yourself, but not to the point where you're ruining other people's experiences. Now, that's what I was told. Okay. So if people want to carry signs, walk them around, you know, as long as they're not ruining other people's experience, and supposedly the person was belligerent, they were told just, you know, be a little more respectful. Clearly, you know, according to my people, I wasn't there. You know, I don't know what happened, you know, fully happened. So I'm only responding to what I was told. You know, he wasn't. And so to sit there and say, well, you know, you're thwarting people's ability to express themselves. I mean, it's a bunch of bullshit. Okay. Like, express yourself as much as you want. You want to chant Pete Alonso. You want to chant anything you want. Okay. But when you get to the point where you won't sit down, you're ruining the experience of people behind you. Come on. That gets to the point where, like, that's unacceptable. And if people want to make a big deal about, you know, or, you know, take, you know, you see it on social media, you see it in certain places, like, he's not fan friendly. Come on, that's nonsense. Okay. I mean, that's just trying to get clicks and, or take things out of context.
So obviously that's in reference to the fan that was holding the Fire David Stern sign and got ejected. Steve Cohen was very careful in this to say, this is what my security told me. Because I got a lot of emails, too, from people saying, hey, I was in the section. The guy wasn't belligerent. The guy wasn't affecting other people's experience. I'm going to defend Cohen on this. Security is all he can rely on. Like, he wasn't there, just like I'm not there. I have no idea what happened. But I'm going to believe Steve Cohen about this. And we can actually have a science experiment if you so choose. James Dolan's been accused, probably rightfully so, of kicking people out of Madison Square Garden for chanting or wearing shirts that are anti-Dolan or what have you. This was a long time ago, obviously, because no one's doing that anymore, even if he doesn't want to go to the second apron. I don't believe that if I walked into Citi Field with a t-shirt that said Fire David Stearns, I do not think for a second they would throw me out. Now, if I'm holding a sign, and signs are a weird thing because people love to hold them, but they are annoying. Like, if you're in front of me holding a sign, and I don't have this experience at Met games, I have this experience at wrestling events, it's the most obnoxious thing in the world. I want to see the show. That's different. So what I would say to anyone who doesn't believe me or doesn't believe the owner, create a t-shirt that says Fire David Stearns or Pete Alonso or sell the team, whatever you want, whatever message you want, and go to the ballpark and see if they throw you out. I don't think they will. Like, I don't get the impression that Steve Cohen is the Gestapo and he's walking around the ballpark telling security to make sure you don't say Fire David Stearns. So I believe him, but I also take note of the very careful wording he used. This is what my security told me. So for anyone who says that's not what happened, he's just trusting what his security guys tell him. So in the course of this interview, you were hearing things I disagree with Steve about, I like, I dislike. This is one area I will defend him on. But Steve, any regrets? Talk about all the changes that were made. Do you have any regrets about the coaching staff changes that occurred this past offseason?
Yeah, listen, I think there's a lot to unpack with, you know, trying to connect different things when they can be, you know, totally separate issues. You know, I the way I would describe it and the thing that, you know, and I don't know how to assess it other than it's a thought of mine that we've had a lot of change this year, whether it's coaching staff, whether it's new players, whether it's rookies. And frankly, it hasn't come together the way we thought it would. And it just may be that amount of change, you know, is difficult for it to come together in a relatively short period of time. You know, got to remember there was a WBC, a lot of players were playing a lot of different places. So the team didn't really get a chance to gel until the season started. And then you had injuries and all sorts. I mean, like, it's just a confluence of things. Trying to pin it on one thing, I think, is probably hard to do.
So why did you change the entire coaching staff? You know, you can't bemoan, ah, oh, there were so many changes. That's what really affected this team, the WBC. The WBC didn't come out of nowhere. You knew the WBC was occurring. It's like bitching about injuries when you sign guys with injury histories. But it does sound like he has regrets about the amount of changes that were made, even on the coaching staff. How is Steve Cohen and his family doing and dealing with all the losing that's going on?
I'm getting ripped around the dinner table. all right. But I just, but that my father, no, I'm kidding, but he's a great guy. But yeah, listen, we watch every game. I mean, well, we watch it together. It's our thing, one of our things together. And, you know, when you're watching, you know, a team lose, it's just like any fan. I'm a fan too. Okay. Like, you know, we're feeling the same thing our fans are feeling. And listen, the weight of responsibility on my shoulders is, you know, because I came in, what did I say? I wanted to do something great for New York, and I'm failing. Okay. I mean, I'm failing. Okay. We're 6 years in. I want a sustainable success. We've had moments, but just not enough of them. And that's troubling to me. And I'm not used to being in a position where, you know, usually I like to fix things and try to figure out how to make things better. And, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep at it. And just because you have a little adversity, actually, you know, that gets me focused, and I'm focused now. And not that I wasn't before, but, you know, I give a lot of rope, and, you know, now I got to pull in some rope and try to figure out how to improve things. And that's what I'm going to do.
I'm failing. That's a quote. I'm failing. We all agree, but it's odd to hear it. Again, what you are noticing from this doesn't mean I agree with everything, because I clearly don't. He is saying stuff that most owners will never say. Quote, I'm failing. And it's true. I mean, the record is the record. So I do appreciate that kind of honesty. How's the day job going? I could care less, but we want to be fair to the Steve Cohen interview. We want to hear everything he said. So play it. Hey, Steve, how's the day job going?
Having an unbelievable year so far. Great. No guarantees, but as bad as the Mets got going, that's how good .72 is going.
Okay, great. We're all so happy for you. What does being more involved mean? Because he even said, I give you a lot of rope, now I got to pull it back in. What does it mean to be more involved, Steve?
Yeah, I'm asking more questions. You know, I'm delving in. I'm trying to.
What is a question? What's a question on your mind right now?
It's a very simple question. What the hell happened here? Yeah. Okay. All right. Like, that wasn't the plan. Okay. Like, that's a legitimate question. I mean, it's a general question, right? But you got to start somewhere, right? And then try to figure out, okay, how were decisions made? How did we make the decisions? You know, what happened here? Now, you know, you can have good process and decisions don't work out. That happens all the time at .72, where the work is good and something happens. And you know, it was unpredictable. And that could happen, you know, like you bring in players and they're all injured. You know, a bunch of them haven't gotten on the field. Now, was that avoidable? Yeah, it's easy to say, well, they had an injury history. But the other side is, you know, well, hell, the guy played last year, you know, and did well. And so, you know, it's easy to second guess, okay? But ultimately, it's about how did we make decisions? What was the process? What did we do? What could we have done different? And these are the things you have to do. And so I don't know what my conclusions are going to be. I don't know, okay? But this is, you know, I give a lot of rope, and now I've got to pull it in. I've got to hold people accountable. You know, everyone screams accountability. Trust me, I'm holding them accountable, and they know it. But it's a process, and it takes some time, and I haven't reached that. We just started it. I haven't reached any conclusions. And it's a process going to take a while. And whatever it is, it is. And you know, I'm going in this, you know, doing this with the notion that I can help improve things.
How are you holding David Stearns accountable? That's my follow-up. How you talk about holding your guys accountable. You've said on this podcast, David Stearns is coming back. He's coming back. He's got a 5-year deal. It may not last the entirety of the contract if things go haywire, but he's definitely coming back. So it's a fair follow-up question. If you're holding everyone accountable, and everyone knows you hold them accountable, what specifically are you doing to hold David Stearns accountable? Are you forcing him to hire a general manager? Are you going to be more hands-on with some of the moves that are made and not made? So that would be my natural follow-up to that. Now, he did say one of the questions he would ask is, quote, what the hell happened this season? So we put it on Steve Cohen. What the hell happened this season?
Listen, you're probably sitting there. I mean, both you guys thought we were going to have big seasons, right? Or, you know, make the playoffs and have a – like, we're all sitting here going, what the hell happened here? Okay? I mean, that's legitimate.
I don't like when guys do this. Brian Cashman did this last year, too, when he was mad at A-Rod and Jeter after they got knocked out by Toronto. He said, well, you guys thought we would be good just because talking heads, which is what I am, Joel Sherman as A-Rod is. Like, we're all very different. Joel Sherman's a know-it-all writer. I'm a dumbass talk show host, and A-Rod's a should-be Hall of Fame baseball player. Just because we thought you were good doesn't exonerate you when you're not good. It's a weird answer. Steve, how do you speak to David Stearns about such a bad season?
Don't use gosh darn a lot.
No, okay, that's not really
people
the word.
People know me kind of like
that. That's not your word.
That's not the word I would use.
But are you on him? Are you on him? I mean,
it's not a question of being on him, okay? This is he works for me, okay? Like anybody who works for me, I'm entitled to ask questions, okay? Like, I don't have to add. It's not like I own the place. Okay. I'm ultimately accountable here. Okay. Like this is my show. Okay. And so I have to do it, you know, like I prefer not to. When things are going well, you guys got the ball, but things aren't going well. Got to start, you know, delving in. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, my preference would be that, to everything would go great, but you know, here we are, right? I mean, you know, unless we get going here real soon, we're not going to make the playoffs the second year in a row. That's pretty freaking bad.
See, he is making me laugh a little bit. That's pretty freaking bad, bro. So bro in and he's Joe B. I would guess that the way he talks to David Stearns is the sarcasm way. Like, I don't think he's Steinbrenner, in which he's basically calling people names and screaming at them. I think it's probably that. Like a lot of sarcasm when he talks to David Stearns about this season. I'll tell you, he's given you some quotes. He's given us some drops for Evan and Tiki. What a disaster. It's pretty freaking bad. I'm failing. Like he's giving you that. All right, Steve, what's your viewpoint of this franchise during the Juan Soto contract?
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to look at it right now, it's hard to see, right? I mean, you know, because we're in the depths of a season that hasn't so far worked out. But you know, there are reasons for optimism. You can get really pessimistic. It's never as bad as you think it is, and sometimes it's never as good as you think it is. Hmm. It's, you know, it's somewhere, you know, here where we have to. You know, so we have a lot of flexibility in payroll after 27. And by the way, I remember 23 and telling Max Scherzer that 24 was a transition year. And guess what? You know, so, you know, you can come up with scenarios where players that haven't performed this year, perhaps, you know, or haven't performed up to where they hope to, perhaps perform better next year. They're more comfortable. Who knows? You know, like you pitchers that we have in the minor leagues that we're hoping contribute actually start to contribute. You know, it's really hard to predict the future. It's really hard. And especially in baseball, right? I mean, there are teams, you know, look at Toronto. We're playing them right now. I mean, their record's under 500. They were in the World Series last year. I mean, how does things, you know, go back and, you know, you get that type of volatility. But listen, my goal was to create sustainable winning. We haven't done it. That bothers me. And we got to get on that trajectory.
How about him confirming that he did tell Max Scherzer it's a transition year? Now, I think what we surmised at the time was he was just saying that to break up with him. He was just saying that so he could approve the no trade clause or waive his no trade clause. But he did say that to Max Scherzer. And finally, any last words for us as Met fans? Any final message to us as Met fans, Steve, as you bestowed us some words for an hour with Joel Sherman and John Heyman? What else do you have to tell us, Mr. Cohen?
Yeah, listen, I hope I came across as someone that cares. And, you know, I'm not, you know, the narratives out there that I don't care, or all the nonsense that happens, total, you know, crap. You know, it's really hard to communicate on Twitter. The minute you say something, there's 1,000 people jumping on you. It has become a hostile place and actually not fun. Where, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was fun, you know, like, but it has become a lot less fun. And really a terrible place to communicate. So I'm going to have to find other ways to communicate with our fans. And I know how much they care. And I just want to let them know I'm on it and I care as much as they do.
Well, you could come on the Rico. I mean, anytime you want. Now, the problem is I'm going to push back a little bit. This isn't going to be, I sit on your lap and you pull a string like some other interviews, but you are, if you want to communicate with fans a different way, that's an option. He's not going to take that option, but that's certainly an option. Yeah, social media is tough, but I think if you're going to choose to tweet about Bo Bichette getting a hit in April and saying that's a big boy hit, it looks odd and it looks like you're hiding when you don't say anything for 2 more months. So I get it. If you don't want to do Twitter, no one's going to force you. And it is a volatile place and it is an ugly place. But I think what turns us off as fans is that you decide to tweet something then, and then you disappear for 2 months when things aren't around. And the other thing I heard was at the very beginning of the interview, Joel Sherman was going on and on about, you know, Steve Cohen is around. Every time I'm at the ballpark, he's around. Joel, him seeing reporters every day is not the same as him communicating with fans. So we're all happy that you get to hobnob with him every day. And that's great. And Joel, again, I say what you want about him. He's very good at his job. He really is. It's gotten a little weird over the years, but he's very good at his job. I have nothing but respect for him. But to equate that to he's always around, I think what fans are saying is they want to hear from him. Not that you and him having off the record conversations at 4:45 during batting practice, it's not the same. But good job by Steve Cohen, and honestly, good job overall by John Heyman and Joel Sherman, as we as Met fans got to hear from him. What did you guys think? My overall impression is he's a very honest guy. There are a lot of things he said that I vehemently disagree with when he talks about the changes, when he talks about too many changes, when he talks about things like that. I kind of push back, but overall, I think he comes across very honest. I mean, he said, I have failed. How could you be mad at that? It's true. I mean, you can be mad that he's failed, but not at his answer. So what'd you guys think of Steve Cohen? Maybe I didn't hear things the way you guys did. So email me, therico@gmail.com, and we'll mix in a mailbag on our next edition of The Rico. We've got a weird series coming up. It's a 4-game series against Atlanta that wraps around Sunday into Monday. So I will tell you our tentative Rico Bronya plan. One would be to do a very late night Saturday night Rico Bronya to kind of recap the first half of this series against Atlanta. We'll mix in some of your emails as well. And then normally we give you a Rico Sunday night. We're going to eschew that one because the series goes till Monday. So if you consume the Rico live or you download it as soon as it's up there, I would tell you to expect a late Saturday night Rico and then a Monday night Rico. So nothing on Sunday, just because, well, it is 4th of July weekend. And it's also kind of a wraparound series. That Saturday night Rico may be at like 1 o'clock in the morning, because I know Hoff wants to go out and party and has every right to, as do I. So that may be the drunk Rico, Hoff. Now that I think about it, maybe the 4th of July middle of a Mets Braves series is the best chance to do that. Either way, make sure you subscribe to The Rico and you will never miss an episode. Subscribe to The Rico Bronya or subscribe to the WFN YouTube page and you will never miss it live. Great job by Hoff putting all those clips together. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.